Stalking, piss poor journalism, revenge porn, a town where boundaries don't seem to exist, and five weddings. That's right. Today is the Julia Roberts and Richard Gere classic, Runaway Bride.
Welcome to the Rom-Com Rescue Podcast, a brand new podcast where we bring the love and life lessons from your favorite rom-coms. I'm Kira Sabin. I'm a healthy dating educator, a certified coach, and a positive psychology practitioner. But more importantly, I spend my days teaching the skills and mindsets of dating.
And I'm Dr. Isabel Morley. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist and an EFT certified couples therapist. And I help couples have the happiest, healthiest relationship possible. Join us weekly as we break down the best love lessons from your favorite rom-coms so we can all get into the best relationships possible. Because we believe that we create our own happily ever afters.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Rom-Com Rescue Podcast. We're so excited you're here. Today, we are breaking down 1999 romantic comedy, Runaway Bride, with Julia Roberts and Richard Gere. But before we dive in today, we want you to get to know us a little bit better. So Isabel and I both have a fun fact, and we're going to talk a little bit more about what we're loving right now besides these rom-coms. So Isabel, do you have a fun fact for me and everybody else so we can get to know you a little bit better?
I do have a fun fact. And I think that people will be surprised to hear this. And I won't get into the technical part of it because it's not that interesting. But I actually have chronic anosmia, which means I have no sense of smell. And I haven't for decades. Which sounds like a big deal. And only at certain times is it actually a big deal. Like, for example, if you leave the gas on, you usually could smell that, but I can't. I have zero sense of smell. So there's a little bit of a safety issue. But what I like to say is there's really more bad smells than good smells in the world, and you just kind of get used to it. And I forget that it's a thing, but there you go. That's a weird fun fact about me.
That is a weird fun fact about you. I have questions. By the way, we didn't tell each other our fun facts beforehand, so I have questions. I am such a foodie, and smell is such a huge part of eating and enjoying food. Does that affect what you like?
Oh, yes. I mean, I can taste probably like 3 out of 10 of what food tastes like. You know, something could have garlic in it, and I wouldn't be able to tell you that it has garlic in it. So it's kind of a waste, really good food, me eating it, or, you know, really good wine or anything like that. The only thing I think I really miss day to day is memories, that memories are so linked to smell, and I don't have that at all anymore. And then the good smells, like it's almost springtime here, lilacs, all that stuff. I miss that stuff. But yeah, food is a lot less exciting without a sense of smell.
Wow. Okay. I have a ton of more questions that we're not going to spend the time on the podcast doing, but guys, if you have questions or if anybody else also has that, please say hello in the community to Isabel and
solidarity.
That's solidarity. Right. So my fun fact is, as I mentioned on our first intro episode, that I did work on cruise ships actually 2 different times. And one of the cruises I did that a lot of people don't know about, but groups will charter a whole entire ship. So what that means is they will take over the whole entire ship for the cruise. They bring on their own entertainment. They usually have a theme. And this theme was bare necessities. It was a naked cruise. So everybody on the cruise as a guest, not as crew or staff or officers, because everybody asks that, like, do you have to be naked? Right? We did not. But the cruise line I worked for at the time, Holland America, which is also a little bit older of a cruise line. So I worked that week and everyone was naked. A lot of them had fanny packs because they didn't have anywhere to put their keys, their room key and everything like that. And they're mostly 65 and up. So it was a definite experience in my life. But honestly, by the end of it, I was pretty empowered by seeing all of these people, most of them over the age of 65 or 70, just embracing it, letting it all hang out. And I'm like, good for you. You kind of get desensitized by the end of the 10 days, but it was a definite experience in life because I think you usually don't have that experience until, unless you choose to go to maybe a nude beach or a nude resort. And this was actually for my job. And the cruise line did give us the option as crew to get off if we were uncomfortable. But I actually, at the time, ran the program for kids, so I didn't really have to work. So I just got to do fun stuff. Because obviously kids were not coming on to
the new cruise.
So I think that that's always a bit of a fun fact that is definitely, you know, part of the Kira experience.
I love this fun fact. Honestly, I need to ask, I mean, of course, I was going to ask if you had to be new too. And it makes sense that they did not require staff to. My second question is, did you see a lot of unfortunate sunburns?
No. Well, yes and no. But I think that these people, I think that when you are comfortable being nude, you take those precautions. You had to carry a towel around. So before you sat down in a seat, you had to place a towel down, right? I think that if you are out on the sun deck in the sun, you know to slather every ounce of you in sunscreen. And I will tell you, it was an experience. I think life is full of interesting experiences, and I'm really glad I had that one. Next question, because I am a voracious content consumer. And by content, I really mean I love like pop culture. So I watch a lot of TV shows. I watch a lot of movies. I listen to a ton of new and interesting music. That's one of my favorite things to do is get on Spotify and find new songs and artists that I like. So we just wanted to talk a little bit about and bring this over. And we'd love to hear, get some feedback from you guys if you like it. But just as you get to know us and who we are outside of just talking about these movies, what are you loving right now? What else are you watching besides Runaway Bride for the 17th time and our rom-coms all the time? What are you watching that you are liking or loving or not?
You're going to have a better answer for this every week than I am, because as you know, I have two young kids. So my TV time is pretty limited and Frozen dominates our TV screen. So I mainly watch our rom-coms, although I am currently watching The Gentlemen and slowly making my way through it. It's a little mafia vibe, violent for me. I thought it was going to be more family dynamics, politics, and it's taken a turn, but I'm watching it. I'm somewhat invested. So it's enjoyable. It's not really what I wanted. That's it though. I got to tell you, that's it.
That's your truth. That's my truth. I would love to say I have been rewatching Girls 5 Eva, which, if you don't know what that is, that was a Peacock show that now recently moved over to Netflix. And I'm obsessed with it. I have been since day one. It's got Sarah Bareilles, Paula Pell, Busy Phillips, and Renee Elise Goldsberry playing these four women who are in their 40s. They're in a girl group that met through a motel in the 90s. And have kind of refound each other again and are trying to do a comeback in their 40s. And it's just so funny.
Spice Girls.
It's funny as shit. I also just finished another Peacock series, Wolf Like Me, which is actually a little bit older. So it's got Josh Gad of Frozen fame. So you would probably know him very well.
Crossover. Hit me up, Olaf.
Crossover. Crossover episode. But I love the fascinating relationship dynamics. I'm not going to give a ton away, but I will say the word wolf does actually have something to do with it. It's a little fantasy, a little sci-fi, but the relationship conversation throughout is fascinating about what do you do if one person in that relationship one night a month is super unsafe. What do you do? And how do you take that on? And just all of the vulnerability and the different stages of moving through that. I find things like that fascinating. And I thought it was really well done. A lot of stuff like that isn't. But I thought it was really well done because it was so much about the relationship more than the wolf.
I'm going to disclose something additional. People get two fun facts today. Speak in my language, because I have fallen into, through no fault of my own, a phase of reading a lot of fantasy, romanticy. I can't even get into it. Maybe for next week we can talk about it. But this whole werewolf relationship thing is currently very much up my alley with my reading habits. So I'm immediately going to watch Wolf Like Me. Immediately.
You should. They're like 30-minute episodes. They're two short seasons of 6 episodes. So I finished it in a few days when I took some downtime in the past week and a half. I'll be interested to see what you, or to hear what you think, because obviously most of us are not going to date wolves or people who turn into wolves, but it,
some of us will, though.
But maybe. But I think it was just still interesting conversations, mm-hmm. and interesting relationship dynamics. And then mostly, I loved that they were so there for each other in such a beautiful way, because I want to see more of that. I want to see more of kind of those relationship role models of the last few years that I can name from different TV shows and movies that just show up for each other. I think we saw that on This Is Us for a TV show. I'm a big Parks and Rec fan. I think that Leslie and Ben really did that. I know there's a lot of people who are big Jim and Pam fans out there from The Office, although that last season kind of ticked me off. But let's talk a little bit quickly about the romantasy books you're reading, because this is brand new to me. I had no idea there was romantasy books going on.
We need to have a whole conversation about this, because I was introduced to this genre because me and some moms from the daycare where my kids go to school started a book club. And one of the moms was like, you should read this book. Let's all read Fourth Wing. The sequel is coming out soon. So we all read Fourth Wing and we all fall deep into a pit of romantasy world where there's dragons and fairies and relationships and sex and love. And I don't know what to do. Now I'm just in it. Now, obviously, people are recommending more books of that nature to me, and I'm consuming all of them. And at one point, I was reading at night with my husband next to me, and I just put the book down and looked over and was like, I think I have to tell you, I'm just like literally reading fairy smut right now next to you. And I need you to know it. I need you to know that.
I need you to know I'm reading some level of porn over here right next to you. And I feel like that should be information you should have, right? Yeah.
I don't know how it happened. I'm very stuck. And he was like, okay. He hasn't asked any questions.
I know very little about this, but somebody told me recently when we were starting this podcast, something about book talk. Now, I don't know if you've heard of this.
Oh, yes. Have I heard of book talk? It's a whole thing.
When I created our TikTok account for Rom-Com Rescue, I put the hashtag book talk because I thought, you know, people who are romance readers are a lot of times romantic comedy watchers, right? So great overlap. And I put book talk in. So now that whole feed is book talk. And it feels dirty. It feels so dirty.
It like, is.
I don't even know what to do with it. I just keep opening up the Rom-Com Rescue and then it automatically shows me my FYP, if you know anything about TikTok. And then I'm like, oh my God. Like all of these young men who are playing this kind of like swashbuckling character on TikTok. And like, I'm like,
here's what I'll say, though. As shocking as your early entry into this world can be, I think it's sort of like the Naked Cruise, where after a week, you're like, okay, we're doing this.
What's next?
That's fine. And there's something really nice about normalizing the romance novel, you know, and letting yourself fall into the fantasy and have fun with it. And book talk has done that. But it does feel like the Naked Cruise, where I'm like, we're just doing this now, and this is fine and normal, and everyone's doing it. Not everyone's doing it is what I'm learning from this conversation right now. But guess what I'm sending you next? I'm sending you Fourth Wing, my friend.
Wow. Okay. I'm into fairy smut. I've never tried it. I tend to, at this age, be like, don't knock until you try it, right? Not necessarily hardcore drugs or hurting people, but, you know, the rest of it.
No murder. Fine.
But I had no idea that this part of Isabel existed. That is fantastic information. And if anybody here is also a book talk fan, let us know, because it's a thing.
It's a world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a world. And there's even like balls and events that people dress up and go to.
Kira, I thought you meant a different kind of balls. And I was like, I don't know where you're going with that.
Oh, no. Okay. Wow. Water.
I'm so sorry. People cosplay and do the whole thing. And here's what I'll say, though. To link it back to the actual rom-com point of this podcast.
That's what we're doing, right?
The men in these books show up in a way that the men in these rom-coms do not. And I think that's really flavoring my reactions to these rom-coms, because I'm thinking, well, like, Rowan wouldn't have done that, you know?
Rowan! Oh, my God. Wow. This is so wonderful. We're going to have to throw a retreat for our listeners in Scotland in a castle. And we'll, like...
Yes.
You know, have like a dress up or whatever. I've always wanted to do that. I know there's a lot of Outlander fans out there.
Mark your calendars, everybody. 2025.
Right. Scotland. Let's do it. Oh, my gosh. Well,
should we pivot? Let's talk about the movie.
Let's talk about the movie, actually. So first impressions. When was the last time you watched this? What did you think? What were you expecting?
I don't really even know what I was expecting. I mean, I knew I've seen it before, so I remember the plot basics. First impressions were, she's got some work to do. Okay, she has some work to do, but it might be eclipsed by the work that Ike, Richard Gere, has to do. Both of them are in no place to be in a relationship, and so... as cute as the ending is, it just felt like, oh, you guys, I think you missed the important part of this, which is like doing the work for self-growth and improvement. So that was like my big overall first impression. Also, yeah, the boundaries. Just nobody had them across the board.
Zero.
Nobody. Where were they? And that just throughout the whole thing, I just kept being like, oh, my God. Oh, my fucking God. You can't do that. What is happening? Everyone's acting like this is normal. The whole time.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. I like this movie. It's funny. I haven't seen Pretty Woman in years because I'm nervous to watch it. And honestly, I didn't even love it the first time it came out because I'm like, this doesn't feel really good. There's something about this. Even younger Kira was like, this doesn't really feel very good. Although I loved that soundtrack. I actually really liked this movie. I have used it a couple times as a tool for conversations in my programs, because I think there's a lot of interesting relationship dynamics in this compared to other things, but I can't get over the 18-year age difference. I cannot get over it. Richard Gere is, in my mind, way too old for her in both of those roles. And as much as I really like this movie, and I do, I actually really like it. I watched it for the second time yesterday and second time in a week. I've seen it probably 10 times in total. I really enjoyed it. Even at the end, I was smiling. I even got chills. I'm like, what is going on, Kira? I don't know. Menopause. I don't know. Who knows? But I'm frustrated by us supposed to be looking at this and going, yeah, this is totally healthy. That this guy who is clearly in a different life space than her, you know, to me, she feels very like young and maybe like mid late 20s and definitely figuring out her life. And we'll get into a lot of that. But he's mid late career almost, right? Mm-hmm. It's a totally different, what I talk about is life spaces, but I just can't get past it. I can't get past going, there is no universe where it feels okay for me, for him to come in and date her.
Pursue her.
Mm-hmm. Pursue her. Because I don't know if he's that much younger than her dad in this, right? It's not something that I find particularly sexy or interesting. Instead, when I see things like this now, I'm like, what does a man who is 18 years older want with a 20-something woman? Yeah. What's actually going on there? So there's just, that's just one of my biggest takeaways. For as much as I like this movie, I can never fully get behind it just because I think the age difference is ridiculous. I thought it was ridiculous. I'm a Pretty Woman. She was like 21 when she was in that role. And he was like 40. I want to push back on Hollywood of like, stop doing this. Stop doing this unless you're going to teach lessons. Because this feels, once again, like an off-power dynamic because he's so much older than her.
Yeah, and wealthier and more established in his career, and also like her national reputation kind of rests in his hands. So she has a real incentive to win him over, at least make a good impression, because he's going to write this GQ article that's going to explain who she really is and what her real problem is. There's just a lot of stuff happening that doesn't feel great and doesn't get figured out or talked about. And this is a good movie that shows the example of skipping the work, of people appearing to get somewhere, some new insight, self-growth, but we don't see the work. And I know we're gonna talk about the ways in which we don't see the work happening.
Absolutely.
But I see what you're saying.
And let me just say this to everybody who is listening. I'm so excited because we're still pretty new to this, right? We've only done a couple episodes. Isabella and I haven't known each other that long. So I am so excited that Isabel is the bad guy this episode instead of me. That she's the one who's, but this and that. Because I'm a little about it, because there's part of me that thinks like they at least demonstrated some self-growth, that they demonstrated some attempt at like self-awareness and like movement forward. But you're absolutely right. It was kind of faked, and they really didn't get there. They really didn't get there.
But you offer a good perspective, because this is also a movie. We're not going to see them, you know. We could, though, writing in their journal, self-reflecting, sharing their insights with people. I would love to see that. But it's not the most exciting thing to witness as a viewer. So I understand movies skip that part. But I'm going to make a strong case, as you know, as to why Julia Roberts' character, Maggie, does not do any work. And people might have that
I love it.
Reaction.
I love it.
We'll see.
And as a reminder to everybody, this is a deep dive podcast, and you are going to get a ton more out of this podcast if you go and watch the movie and then come back and listen to it. If you haven't seen it in 10, 15, 20 years, you can still learn quite a bit, but it's not going to be quite the same because we are deep diving into what we have just watched multiple times. The last thing I'll say on my first impression is this just cemented how much I love Julia Roberts. She's adorable in this again. And it also cemented, although I had a moment yesterday where I'm like, okay, I almost see it, but I don't really get Richard Gere as a romantic comedy lead. I actually like him kind of as a person. He's a Buddhist. He's like a classically trained musician, I think. But I don't get it. I don't get that we have to, whether it's fairy smut or a rom-com, at the end, we have to feel like we believe that it's believable, that what both actors are bringing, what the script is bringing, what the director is bringing, is that this love is believable. And though I do feel they have a good connection, and you know what? I thought about this yesterday. I wonder if they just keep writing his character so terribly. They just keep writing such dick characters. I wonder if I just can't buy into Richard Gere, besides the fact that he's way too old for her, because he's just such a jerk.
But you know what it is too? Yes, he's just unlikable. And this is something I know we talked about. Why does he have to be a misogynist? Like, why make that a core part of his professional and personal life? Couldn't he just have been like a desperate writer who took a last minute story and then had to sort of pay the price? That alone would have made sense, but they made him a woman hater, a notorious woman hater. The other piece for me that really turned me off from his character was that his anger felt very real, and it wasn't comic anger. But when he's mad and he's throwing insults, or when, you know, Maggie's in his apartment and he goes and tries to get into the bathroom to get to her, and he says, like, we really have to talk about why you're such a pain in my ass. It's not comic anger to me. I was like, that feels really dark. Like, the anger is too real. He does too good a job of it. And I couldn't get past that piece of it. It made it not funny. I was like, this isn't funny. I actually want her to get out of that bathroom and get away from this man.
Right. And even though we're laughing with her and she's smiling through it, we cannot escape how, once again, one-sided the shittiness is. It's kind of funny because when we were planning these movies, in no way did I think any of them overlapped. We discussed this for weeks, guys. We discussed, like, here's, you know, we wanted to pick things that people have seen. We wanted to pick things that people know and can easily watch again. But there's such an overlap here of, first of all, why is Hollywood only making American rom-coms with the trope enemy to lovers? Why is that such a thing?
Hate it.
I've been picking out our next ones, and then I'm like, oh, wait, it's another enemies to lovers. And I'm like, why do we keep teaching people that people can be shitty to you, but yet that's love, or can turn into love? Why do we keep teaching that? And then also, they are making these men super fucking unlikable. They're writing this. I mean, when I don't like Tom Hanks, it's a freaking problem. So why are they writing these men so horribly? And it's just, and I'm looking at something you wrote here, which is this just reinforcing this behavior being okay for men, mm-hmm. and that women are supposed to tolerate this behavior. And in fact, it's that whole going back to being on the playground, and if somebody likes you, they're mean to you. Mm-hmm. And then this is just the grown-up version of that. And I want to be like, if somebody in real life is shitty to you, don't pursue that. Don't think that that means that they'd like you. That's not what that means at all. And I don't know why we're kind of fascinated by this concept in our culture.
You know, it's a really interesting psychological question, because from a narrative standpoint, you just need to have the tension point, a reason why people can't be together before they then come together, right? For Crazy Rich Asians, it's the family issues come between them. Enemies to Lovers is a really easy way to have that dramatic tension, but it doesn't resonate for me. I don't find it appealing. I don't feel great afterwards. So I'm sure there's interesting research on it. I'm going to dig into the research piece. But I think the other component that we discussed was, this isn't great for women to get this messaging. It's not great for men either, because it's teaching them, this is how you get the girl, is that actually you do act like the asshole, but then you kind of come around and you change for them, but you don't really change. And it works, right? And that's not fair for men who are trying to move away from this toxic masculinity mindset culture. So it just, all around, I wish we would leave this trope behind and move on to something different. But I don't know.
And I feel that it's interesting being in the world of dating, right? Because it's different than your world. But being online right now and seeing women so frustrated with the dating culture, and then also so frustrated with just men in general. Yet I hang out with the greatest guy every single day, aka my husband, Danny. You just met him. He just poked his head onto the camera to say hello to Isabel here just a second as he was getting me some sparkling water. He does at least half of cooking and cleaning this house. We are partners in every way, which I'm so proud of us for building and creating. But I feel like there's a backlash right now against dating in men, because we see these kinds of characters all over, not only in our rom-coms and our TV shows, but they're pointed out in real life and maybe politicians or celebrities. And there's just so many good guys out there who are willing to try, get in a relationship. And I wish we could see that too. And I think that these movies are creating part of that narrative that I think is really unhelpful if we're just giving up on love instead of realizing we have a whole bunch of control over who we choose and what we build.
Amen. Amen to that, sister. So despite my strong feelings about parts of this film, I think there are a lot of really good love lessons, actually. Lessons about like individual growth and from other relationships that we see on the screen. So I'll throw it to you. What do you think are the best love lessons that you saw?
And I like that they tried to show some growth and healing here. I like when we saw that she actually paused and said, I think that there's some things I need to do on my own. Now, was that work enough to get her into a healthy relationship moving forward? No, not even close. There needed to be another 2-minute montage of both of them doing work. But I do like that they at least tried, because usually what happens is we just see them have either an argument or a 4-second conversation and we're back together and everything's okay. So I at least liked that that we were seeing her kind of step back and try. Mm-hmm. I also, so that's one of my favorite things about that. I also love that she made the grand gesture at the end. We don't see that very often where the female makes the grand gesture. She actually proposed. I proposed to Danny. So I just like that we are seeing that part that we don't see that often, right? He shouldn't have been the one to do a grand gesture. She was the one who left again. Ran away mm-hmm. from their wedding, him running after that truck. It's like upsetting.
It is. It risks.
As an anxious attachment style, I'm like, run. So abandoned, like PTSD. Just go catch her. Go catch her in that FedEx truck or whatever it was. But I do like the fact that she went. She knew that she was the one who was going to have to come back and talk to him and make some, at least token gestures of, here's some things I've learned about myself. Here's some things I want to talk to you about. And I like that she proposed to him, because I don't know if we actually have ever seen that in a movie before of a female proposing to a male.
Yeah.
I don't know where that podcast episode is anymore, but I did a whole podcast about how I proposed to Danny. And it's not like what people think. We were not like in Disney World and I got down on one knee. We were living in Costa Rica and it just made sense. And I just looked at him one day and said,
"You want to
calling you
thing?
My call me, yeah, calling calling you my boyfriend feels silly at this point. We're so much more than that." And so I'm like, I never thought I'd want to get married, but I want to call you my husband. And it was, yeah, yeah. I know. Don't make me like cry, but
oh,
you know,
my God. Don't make me cry.
And that was 4 or 5 years into our relationship. We had been living together for years. We decided not to have kids early on. So, you know, weddings and marriage wasn't necessarily a goal for me, because I'm kind of like, why do we need to do that? You know, but there was just a point where I'm like, I love you in this relationship so much. Calling you my boyfriend just feels diminutive. I don't know what the mm-hmm. word is I'm looking for. And I want you to be my husband. I want you to be my partner. And it was romantic. But I also know we kind of decided not to. So I want you to take some time to think about it. Is this something you're open to? And, you know, he did. He took a little time and he said, I am. Like, let's talk about it.
And it's not the crazy grand gesture, right? Like even promposal level people go to do this, which I think can be beautiful and lovely. But honestly, my favorite part of Richard Gere in this, of Ike, is his hypothetical proposal up into the last sentence. When he says, like, the most honest proposal is, this is going to be really hard. One of us, both of us, is going to want to get out of this at some point.
Yep.
But I want to do this with you. And that feels like your proposal of just being close, connected, honest about what it is. Doesn't have to be your whole family is waiting behind a bus to surprise you. And, right, just there's so much pomp and circumstance now around proposals and marriage, and it's hiding the fact that what you're really saying is, I love you and I like you enough to get through the hard times with you and to build a life with you. Do you want to do that with me? That's what it is at the end of the day.
It is. And we do not want to get me started on. So first of all, I am frustrated, let's use that word, by the fact that there are about, I don't know, maybe like 100 bridal magazines.
Are there really?
And like 0 magazines on relationships. I get very frustrated in the world that I live in that there's so much focus on a wedding and brides and
the event.
Instead of the event, instead of what's happening after
mm-hmm.
and how to prepare for that and how we spend all of this time and energy and money on this one day and very little time in preparing ourselves for a relationship, getting to know our partner. And oh, yes. This is my last thing I will say about this, but I solidly believe that if you're asking someone to marry you and you don't know that the answer is a yes, then you should not be asking.
Yes. Yes. It should not be a surprise. There should not be ambiguity. It is a mutual decision that you both want to feel pretty certain. We're both interested in doing that. Maybe the timing of it could be a surprise, but there should be an understanding. You're absolutely agree. And I think, to your point, that's Maggie's problem in this movie, is that it's all about the wedding. It's about getting the guy, and it's about the event. It's about the expensive dress. It's about the fun party, whatever it looks like, right? Whatever random theme it is. It's not about the actual relationship. It's not about the person that she's going to be with. And I think that's why, and this is a lesson that I actually liked from the movie. I don't love the way that she left them, but I did like that when push came to shove and she saw that legal commitment staring her in the face, she made the right choice for herself, which was to leave. And again, there's a way better way of doing that than waiting until the moment when everyone has gathered to watch you get married three times. But that's a good lesson. Don't follow through on a commitment just because everything has been planned and you're in a white dress or you're in the tux and everyone's looking at you. That is not a good enough reason to marry someone. So if you have that gut realization, yeah, get out. And I have to say, of all the ways that she left her man at the altar, my favorite by far is when she just like slowly turns and just keeps on walking.
Keeps on walking.
Dragging the kid behind her.
That's a no for me.
I don't know why it kills me so much. But I like that.
And one of the lessons I wrote down here is that while Maggie's got grit, she keeps trying. She keeps going for it. She also still lives in her hometown where they are not kind to her whatsoever. These people are mean. And she keeps going. She keeps dating. She keeps trying. Although... yeah. I think that she should have paused maybe after the first time she decided to not go through it and talk to a therapist, let alone the second, third, or fourth. But I do like the fact that she's not giving up.
Eternally hopeful that this next one is going to be the right one. I know. I agree. And I kind of like her fiance in this, the most recent one, Bob, the coach, because...
right. Chris Maloney, I believe, which I'm sure there are some major fans out there. I am not an SBU watcher. Kira's too sensitive for that TV show.
He's Chris got Maloney a following.
Oh, he sure does. Uh-huh. He sure does.
He's
so
like,
I feel like we needed to give him a shout out there because...
talk about grit and eternal optimism that this is going to work out for him when it hasn't for people prior to him. But he's really, he's talking about it with her. He's engaging with her on how to make sure... the wedding happens, and obviously he's self-focused and doesn't realize things that she needs, and he's missing important information from her, and he turns it into a coaching opportunity. But he's not ignoring the fact that she's run twice before, and I liked to see that. Clearly, this is a thing we have to anticipate and work on.
I am the prize, right? The goal, focus. The victory. Focus. Yeah, I enjoyed his character. I wrote that her exes slash... Bob are a little distracted, but we'll get that into that in a second. But I did want to also just mention, I loved that her and Peggy, who which is Joan Cusack, who I could not literally love more, have this fight, and it was just grown up. You'll hear me say that. I just like when I see real grown up situations and just not drama for drama's sake. They sat down and they had a real conversation, and Julia apologized and she asked, is this really upsetting you? And like, how do I do it better? And they had a very probably overdue conversation about this, but I really liked it because they came with empathy, with respect. You could see that they were actually good friends and had been for a long time. And I love seeing that. I love seeing that kind of instead of just a, you go, girl. And there's a couple times where she's just like, you just got to figure out you. She came in and she was just like, don't beat yourself up, but you got to take some time and figure out you. And I wish she would have done that a little bit more, but we can get into that. Any other favorite love lessons?
This is my favorite one by far, so I have to mention it before we move on. I loved, loved, loved seeing Ike's friendship with his ex-wife, Ellie, who's Rita Wilson, and her new husband, Fisher, who's also Ike's friend, if that's a little complicated. I loved seeing...
it does feel a little complicated.
It's a little...
doesn't it?
I don't know.
They don't explain
which,
it.
Yeah, friendship came first or after. But I loved seeing them sit together, him and his ex-wife sitting at a piano talking and him finally asking her the question, what went wrong? He doesn't let her answer, but we'll just put that aside. He finally cares and asks, and then he kisses her on the cheek as they, like, repair from their divorce 12 years ago. And his friend, his ex-wife's new husband, walks in and makes a joke about how, oh, you cad, you know, I shouldn't have left you two alone. And it was so secure. You could just feel that Fisher and Ellie are secure in their marriage with each other, that Ike isn't a threat, that Ike and Ellie are secure in their friendship, Ike and Fisher. And it, again, felt grown up. Of, you could imagine a movie in which Fisher comes in and it blows up because Ike is, you know, kissing the cheek of his current wife and Ike's ex-wife and all the stupid drama.
Right.
And it was beautiful to see just a mature, secure relationship between adults.
I loved it. I agree. I wrote that down too, that I just loved that we got to see when she asked him what went wrong with your marriage. And he's like, I'm not sure. I want to say to everybody out there,
you should
know.
If
you're not sure what went wrong with a major relationship, let alone a marriage, there's probably some questions or some work that should be done there, because you should really know why a significant relationship ended. And I know it can be very hard if one person doesn't, like, walks away or even ghosts. I've heard of people dating for years and all of a sudden that person just leaves and never looks back. And that is very frustrating. And it's mostly frustrating because we don't have information. And when we don't have information, we fill in the information. And what we fill it in with is usually not good. But at all, I agree that I thought it was beautiful to get to see, first of all, just Fisher and Ellie and just how secure they seem and how kind of comfortable that friendship is with all of them. And that they're really there to support them. They're like, Ike, we see you. We know you're a little messed up. We really want the best for you. We hope you can kind of figure it out. But we see you. I do like the fact that the conversation, the simple version of, did I just not see you? And she said, mm-hmm. You did not see me. And to me, that translates, I didn't take the time to continue getting to know you as you were changing, as you were growing. We didn't take the time to stay connected. We didn't take the time to, when things felt off or different, or as in therapy world, rupture starts happening, that a rupture happens, that they didn't get curious and figure out how to fix it.
Yeah, absolutely. It also feels like a very important indication of his growth, because the whole point of him and Maggie getting together is that he sees her, right? Like, that is the premise, that he sees her for who she is. He's paying attention to her. At first, it's in a really inappropriate, boundaryless way that he's curious about her, but he sees her, and that shows him focusing on someone other than himself, which for him is a lot of growth.
Mm. So just to point out, you know, what I love to do. So this article comes out, right? So the article comes out within, I'm guessing, a couple of days in 1999. She writes Ellie. She says there are 15 things that you should have fact checked. We'll get there in a second. But so then he drives to Hale, Maryland, where she lives. How long do we think it is between the day that he drives to Hale, Maryland, and them deciding the first time to get married?
I don't know. It can't be that long. 2 weeks?
Tops. Tops. I think that they lead us to believe it's about a week or maybe a week and a half. And I just, Hollywood, please hear me as I say this. Stop putting unrealistic timelines. When they all of a sudden are sitting there and looking at each other, she has literally just left Bob at the altar 17 seconds ago.
By making out with another man in front of him as a way of ending their engagement.
Beautifully done, Maggie. So made out with him. And then they walk outside. They start making out and then decide. And she's like, well, and he's like, well, I've been loving you now for a little while, so we should get married. And you've got a dress. And so I just want to point out to everybody that please be aware of the ridiculously unrealistic timelines, because can you feel connection with someone after that amount of time? Of course. But is that something that is love, or love that is going to stick around and stay around for years? Fuck no. In my world, fuck no. You don't know that person enough. And then the thing is they actually reference it. They reference, we think attraction
is confused for
rightness. Mm-hmm. Right? And I'm like, what do you guys think this is? You don't actually know each other besides spending a date together or two. It's just, what are we doing? What are we doing? I don't get it. I don't know why.
That was the weirdest part, when she just brutally ended her engagement so harshly with this man.
So harshly.
And then in this cutesy way decides that because she has a wedding planned with someone else, that he'll fill in as the groom 2 days later, and that's somehow romantic. And the whole thing was bizarre to me and so inaccurate. I wouldn't encourage anyone to do that. But you know what it made me think of course I take it here, is reality TV dating shows, where this is what people are seeing on rom-coms and also in reality TV, of like the Love is Blind and the Married at First Sight, that there is some magical compatibility that can happen where it would be a good idea to get married to someone before you met them, or within a month of meeting them, before you have a chance to get to know each other, integrate your lives and your communities, that it will work out. And these shows are reinforcing this message that you and I both really hate, which is there's just a magical person out there for you. And if you can just find them, everything will fall into place and you're going to have a happy marriage. And that's not the right way to go about this. I just can't stand it.
And I will just say, we are seeing information and statistics that back this up. This isn't just me raining on every romantic person's parade. Don't think you're in love after 10 days. Don't think you're in love after a couple of months, because you don't know that person enough to see if that love can continue. You know, understand the difference between a moment of feelings and a long-term relationship, because they're very different.
And love isn't enough. Right? You could deeply love someone and not be able to have a good relationship with them. And that's really hard for people too. They stay in relationships because there is real love, but there isn't communication. There isn't conflict resolution. It's not healthy in whatever ways it's not healthy. And, you know, the idea that love is enough and that when you find the right love, it'll cure everything else. It's not true. It's not true. I'm so sorry, everyone listening. It's not true. Don't look for that. Look for the person who's going to do the work.
Hearts. I've gotten over it. I want everybody to understand. I want everybody to side eye, not their fairy smut, not their rom-coms, but to go, but that's not real, right? I can enjoy it and I can think it's wonderful and I can, you know, buy into it for this hour and a half that I'm watching it. But understand that 10 days is not enough to know somebody before you choose to decide that they're going to be your life partner, let alone possibly the father or mother of your children.
Mm-hmm. Wait, how about this, Kira? You're breaking their hearts to help them avoid heartbreak. What?
I don't know if I could love it more. I don't know if I could love it more.
What?
I don't know if I could love it more. Let's move on to some of the worst love lessons.
Well, we already touched on one, which is obviously, if you're leaving this many people at the altar and not self-reflecting as to what is going on for you, that's a problem. This is not normal behavior to get into this many relationships and to leave people at that last minute. Where's the insight? As you said, where's the going to therapy, asking friends and family to talk her through what's going on? Why does it take a journalist publicly shaming her? For her to start asking herself some questions about the impact she's had on the people around her. That felt like a message that we all need to kind of notice.
I'm going to take that one step further. I'm going to say, not only does it kind of bother me that she has now just left, by the time that she gets together with Ike, four different men. Four different weddings. So much money has been spent. There just has to be a point where you go, there's something that I need to step back and look at here. because I seem to want this, but I'm not going through with it. I'm not actually committing. What's going on there?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we do kind of see some small, like, her eating the eggs, which I just want to say, of course, Eggs Benedict is her favorite. Eggs Benedict is amazing. I mean,
was she going to pick a quiche over Eggs Benedict? She's not an animal.
I mean, of course, I'm like, of course it's Eggs Benedict. Eggs Benedict is so good. And what I think I'm most bothered by is that Ike still was the one to have to save her in this. That he was the one who had to point out about the eggs. He was the one who had to point out that she didn't know herself. He was the one who had to point out that she was kind
afraid
of attaching, afraid of committing and attaching to people. That just annoyed me, that we just had to have a man come in and save her, that she couldn't create this awareness herself in a very easy way in this movie, that she could have created that. Like, why did he have to come in and fix her? And then what happens? They're starting a precedence in that relationship. That's starting a power struggle in the relationship. What happens when she's quote unquote fixed? Is that relationship still going to be the same? The power dynamics have just changed.
No, he needs to be fixed. So then they'll have to shift over to figuring him out, because talk about
that.
Bad love lessons. I mean, the way he begins their relationship, very problematic. Doesn't feel good to me at all that he's invading her privacy and people are allowing him to. That's a whole nother issue. But he makes fun of her and mocks her up until he randomly decides that he doesn't like that people make fun of her and mock her. And at her engagement luau, whatever that, the day before, 2 days before, whatever it is, gets mad at everybody else for making fun of her. And like, I don't see him showing real growth or insight or consistency. I'm confused as to who he's supposed to be by the end of this.
I do think we should just point out, if you haven't seen this for a while, and Ike writes this, so he ends up meeting one of her exes in a bar. This guy is clearly drunk, like shouting at him across. This guy wants to be heard so bad. Shouting across the bar at Ike, like, well, I've got a story for you. You know, I'm just like, calm down, dude. But Ike doesn't fact check. I mean, can you imagine waking up one day in your town of 3,000, opening up a national newspaper and think, is there an article written about me? And nobody has called me. Nobody's talked to me. Nobody's asked me for a comment. And then when he gets fired for his very bad journalistic behavior, he then literally stalks her. He comes to her hometown. He goes to everywhere she goes. He goes to everyone she knows. It's so unboundaried and so disrespectful. How we even believe that this has turned into love is like Hollywood magic.
Hollywood
magic. Freaking magic. Because he's a jerk. He says terrible things about her. These are all his mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He blames her for his behavior.
He blames her. Yeah. He blames his ex-wife for firing him, although he put misinformation in his article, which is, you know, journalism 101, right? Exactly. So he behaved badly. He never apologized. And then something that I want to talk about really quickly, he wore her down. That's what this feels like, right? Like, he wore her down by just showing up again and again and again, and kind of pushing himself in her life and making judgments, and then like choosing to tell her who she is.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Here.
Not romantic.
Have you seen New Girl? This is related,
of
I
course.
Promise.
Yes, of course.
What is that called? He's Bidening. He's just going to be there, right? He's there. He's there everywhere she turns until there's so much exposure to being with him that she ends up liking him. That's literally what this is, right? He wore her down. He was just there. That was his tactic. Be
what,
there.
What a new girl who did that.
They're doing a wedding where they're all trying to sleep with someone, and they're trying to help Jess get the groomsman. I think it's the best man. And she's competing with Jessica Biel. And they realize that she has no strategy to actually flirt except for being there. That she can just be there. And that's the best chance she's got. And that's what he's doing. He's just constantly there, embedding himself in every situation. And like you said, he wears her down. It works.
So I just want to talk about this for a second because we seem to be confused in our culture that that's not okay. Now, for so long in the movies from, because I love old movies, 30s and 40s and 50s, it was a woman's role on screen to protest. If somebody hit on her, if somebody came on to her, if somebody tried to kiss her, it was her job to protest. And then because the kiss is so good, because the love was so big and real, she like melts into him, right? And that is a disgusting message that we have taught women and men, that if a woman says no, try harder, wear her down, keep showing up, keep being there until she's, and then women think that men are supposed to chase them and are supposed to do that. Mm-hmm. Please stop believing that. It's nobody's job to knock your walls down. It's nobody's job to chase you and have to get to know you if you're not willing to open up to them. And ladies, it is not sexy or even intentional if somebody is coming at you that hard. That's more about winning and the chase than it has anything to do with love. And I don't like the fact that I actually saw a post just recently of just like, why aren't men kind of just coming after it anymore? Like I say no once and they don't ask again. And I'm like,
it's called consent. That's good. That's good. People want, right?
But I mean, think that there's just parts of our culture that are so ingrained that we don't question them, and we need to question them. If somebody says no, we say, okay. If somebody's, this doesn't feel good to me, you walk away. If you're a person who thinks that you just have to try harder, you are putting yourself in unhealthy situations and unhealthy relationships.
And, you know, I'll also put this on the people who write that kind of post of like, how come men aren't trying harder and, right, not taking the first no. I want them to self-reflect because I'm guessing they're getting a real self-esteem boost by somebody pushing past their initial no, chasing them, being there, wearing them down, putting all that effort in, right? That is doing something for them that they feel like they need to feel good about themselves, to be attractive, to be desirable, to be worth somebody putting all that effort in. And so they need to do some work on their end as well to not feel like that's something that they need or expect from a partner. So it's both people involved in this, but I'm with you. We shouldn't be doing that in our relationships.
I think there's some stuff that's left over from our former generation, and we haven't really pushed it out yet, or we haven't really questioned it. And I think that a lot of women my age, particularly, I'm a Gen X, believe that, right? That it's, that as a woman, we're supposed to kind of stay still, be pretty, and be chosen.
Mm-hmm. But say no, but keep getting chosen until you say yes. Yeah.
Until you say yes. And that doesn't start healthy relationships. The people who are doing that are not usually that long-term interested in loving you or a loving relationship. And, you know, I'm here for love. I'm here for us to get to love. And nothing about that behavior gets us to love. Mm-hmm. And we need to stop confusing attention with intention.
Mm. Love that.
The last thing I want to say about bad love lessons or just the worst love lessons is that we see Maggie run in after she got Ike fired. So she's got the newspaper. She went outside. She grabbed it. She opens it up. She reads the message from the editor and is like, I got him fired. I got him fired. And he's like, huh?
Who?
What? Who? What are you talking about? Try on this backpack. This is what we're going to wear in the Himalayas. Let me tell you this. If somebody decided to take me down nationally, the first person who's going to know about it is Danny, is my partner.
Second person is me, obviously.
Obviously. And he is going to be on my side. He is going to be fighting with me.
He's going to be checking the newspaper to see if...
He's going to be checking the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And in fact, being Danny, he's going to go grab that newspaper, see what the information is, and probably kindly translate it to me, because we occasionally do that. And a partner not only knows what's going on, but is supportive, like stops what they're doing and goes, right, stops what they're doing and goes, okay, tell me what's going on. Okay, that's great. Awesome. Good for you. Celebrating. He was checked out. And that just told me where the status of the relationship was.
Can I offer another take too, though? Which is that the whole town is checked out on Maggie. I mean, no one's listening to her. No one's taking her seriously. No one's taking this next wedding seriously. Everyone pokes fun of her all the time. So Ike's just doing it on a bigger scale. But like, even when he comes to town, like we've talked about, everyone dishes the dirt. They let him into their homes. They tell him whatever he wants to know. Nobody is holding a boundary or respecting her privacy. So this kind of feels like Maggie's lot of no one cares how she feels, what's going on. And she doesn't take it seriously either. And I think that's the message of she's not being critical and carrying the weight of leaving these men at the altar and self-reflecting. So why should anybody else? So I kind of forgive Bob in that way of, I think to be in Maggie's life, you kind of have to be surface level with her.
Probably, because otherwise you have to look at the fact that she's left her last three relationships at the altar and doesn't seem to have done any work around it. By the way, everybody, I'm not saying or have any judgment over people who have had multiple marriages or multiple relationships, but if you are meeting people and dating people who have had multiple relationships end, here's a great question to ask. A great question is, what was your role? What would you do differently this time? Look where the healing is. Look what they've learned. Look what they understand is their part. Because there's nothing wrong with us being, especially as we get older, having multiple significant relationships or even marriages. But we do want to know if they're not working out, why they're not working out. We want to know that somebody's been thinking about that. That's really important. And sometimes we're just like, oh, this person's been married three times. Okay, I guess fourth's the right time, right? Or the best time. So I guess we'll get it right this time.
Yeah. And what you don't want to hear is, I have no idea what happened. Or you don't want to hear, it was all the other person because they were this evil psychopath who ruined everything. And it's like that with all of my exes, which maybe sometimes is true. But you want people to say, even if that's the case, I'm picking people who are mistreating me and I am not getting out of relationships fast enough. And you want to see the self-reflection piece of, here is what I have taken from it that I need to do, and not just my ex sucks. Because that's an easy answer, but that's not a growth answer.
One thing, what I say to my clients is, if you're on a date and somebody says, my ex is crazy, then the question should be, okay, why do you feel like you chose that person? Why do you think that you stayed? Sometimes, why did you choose to have children with that person? And how is that going to affect our relationship moving forward? Because there's a very good chance that ex is still going to be playing a role. But we just kind of are like, oh, yeah, I bet they are a jerk or are crazy. And this time it's going to be different. I mean, and that's just unrealistic. And who we are.
Humans are messy. Everyone's crazy sometimes. Everyone behaves poorly sometimes. There are the real narcissists and psychopaths out there, but it's not the majority of people. So you do want to see everybody self-reflecting. Here's what I did poorly. Here's what they did poorly.
Let's get into the deep dive really quick, Isabel, because I really wanted, and you kind of took the next level on it, but I really wanted to talk about self-awareness. One of the reasons that I have used this movie as a teaching tool is because one of the messages I feel we're supposed to take away is that she doesn't know herself. Right? She doesn't know what kind of eggs that she likes. She doesn't really know maybe who she wants in a partner. She doesn't even know what kind of wedding she wants. Later, she thinks about it and she tells Ike. But that lack of self-awareness can really, really hurt us when we are choosing our partners and getting into relationships. And I think that one of the best things we can do when we're single is take some time and figure out who we are, especially if we are coming out of a long-term relationship or a marriage. We are a part of something. And when we become single again, it's sometimes we have to figure out who we are, what we like. And maybe that's changed. If you got married at 19, 20 or early 20s, if you're in your 40s or 50s, you might not know who you are anymore. And there's a couple of places that I like to tell people that they can create some self-awareness. But I also want to hear about what you think about self-awareness in relationships and how important that is.
Yeah, I think the self-awareness in relationships piece is critical, because if you don't know yourself, You don't know who you are, what you want, what you care about, your values. You are likely to become a people pleaser because that's very easy to then defer to the other person. If they do know themselves and their preferences and their needs, very easy to just acquiesce and do what they want, which we see Maggie do. She likes whatever eggs the other person likes. Very easy. People who have no self-awareness and who are people pleasers are not being authentic in a relationship. Their partners do not really know them, so they're not fully present, and it leads to all sorts of problems. And as you know, I'm going to make a case for why Maggie is still a people pleaser. But
and I think you're not wrong. I think you're not wrong. You've made this case, and I don't disagree whatsoever. Could you tell everybody what exactly a people pleaser is? Because I think a lot of times we hear that phrase, and then a lot of times people who I see and would say, I think you have some people pleasing tendencies, they're the ones who are like, I'm not a people pleaser. So could you tell everybody what a people pleaser is or what the definition is so they can maybe recognize that in themselves? Because I would have never thought that I was a people pleaser, and I absolutely was.
Me too. I like to say I'm a people pleaser in recovery, mm-hmm. which means that there are also lapses and times when I still people please. People pleasing is when you try to keep everybody else happy with you. When you are sacrificing things that you want or need, or you don't even realize things that you want and need because you are so tuned in to other people and their needs and trying to keep them happy. And whatever that looks like, you put them first. And I will tell you, earlier in my relationship with my husband, I was so deep in my people pleasing ways. He would ask me a question, even like, what do you want to do this afternoon? And I would literally not be able to answer it because all I could think was, well, I know what I think he wants to do.
Wow.
And that's fine with me. And I have no issues with doing that thing, right? It wasn't like I strongly didn't want to, but I literally would have to say, I need a minute to go away from you and think about what I actually want to do this afternoon because I literally do not know. And it's taken a long time to sort of untrain my brain about that because it's so easy to just focus on the other person. And us, you know, more avoidant attachment style people out there like to not make waves, like to keep the other person happy and not have conflict and make big emotions. And they tend to be people pleasers because of that. But as you and I discussed, people pleasing is essentially manipulation. It's making people happy with you and avoiding conflict at the expense of not only yourself and your own needs, but your partner, getting to know the actual you and engage with you authentically. So it looks and sounds kind of nice on the surface, but it's really not nice for anybody involved.
It's not. And once again, it doesn't get us love. If one person is making all of the sacrifices in the relationship, you're not going to have a loving relationship. If one person is bending over backwards, if one person is doing all of the things. And I think that sometimes, I think especially as women, we've been a little bit raised to be that person. We think we're being nice. Oh, I don't care. Oh, wherever you want to go eat or whatever you want to do. We think we're being really nice, but we're not. And it was a wake up call, a little come to Jesus moment for me when I realized it's a manipulation. I was saying and doing things that weren't true, that weren't real, just so they would like me, just so that they would choose me, just so they wouldn't leave. Mm-hmm. And I also had relationships where they would leave because I didn't give them enough of my actual self to hold on to and to love. And that becomes a problem of the people pleaser, is we're so busy trying to be things for others that nobody knows how to be there for us, to love us. And that's what love is. Love is how we take care of each other. Mm-hmm. Love is how we connect and show up for each other. And so when we have no needs, when we're taking care of ourselves and everything's fine, people don't know how to be in our lives. And that's a problem.
They can't connect because there's something to connect to, because you are just a mirror to whatever they want and need. And as a good friend of mine, co-author of my book, says, she's a sex therapist, and she says in that field, a common phrase is, you can't trust a yes if you never hear a no. You can't trust a yes.
Wow, I love that.
If you never hear a no. And that's exactly what it is. If your people pleaser is saying yes to everything and you never hear a no, then you feel like the yes is just obligatory. It's standard. Yep. And you never hear something different from them. And then you don't know them. You know the version of them that they think they should be to make you happy. And that doesn't work.
And on the other side of that, and I just had this conversation this week with someone, which is, what are you teaching people how to treat you when you have no needs? When you're always okay, when you never ask for any help, when you never ask for any support, you are teaching people they don't have to do anything. They don't have to show up for you. They don't need to support you. They don't need to celebrate you.
People like to be there. People like to show love and support. People like to be needed. They like to be asked for help, right? And there's a limit to that. But yeah, it helps connect us when we allow people to be there, to be supportive when we're vulnerable. And you're cutting your partner off from that opportunity by never asking for something or saying no to something.
Absolutely. So dialing back to self-awareness for a second, and just how, you know, that lack of self-awareness can lead us to people-pleasing. But let's say you don't identify as a people-pleaser. You're like, that's not my thing, but maybe I'm not that self-aware about what I actually am needing in a relationship or what I want. I'd like to share a couple of things of where I think people can work on as a single, because there are things that you can work on about yourself as a single. And then I would love to hear from you what you think they can do for a relationship. So for a single, I think the first thing you can do is knowing your attachment style. We talked about that the very first week for how to lose a guy in 10 days. If you don't know much about it, I actually put attachment resources in our show notes for that. I worked real hard, people, so go check it out. But knowing how that attachment style shows up when you meet somebody, when you're building something with somebody, and if it's possibly sabotaging you, is such helpful information so that you can step back and go, is this real or is this just my attachment style flaring up and I need to step back, calm down, and actually, you know, maybe talk to somebody or talk to my partner to see if this is a real thing or I'm just making it up. So I think that is such an easy thing that you can do. There's so much free information and is super helpful. I also think values. There are a ton of just easy values assessments online. Knowing what's important to you, knowing at the end of the day where you put your time, what you're passionate about, where you put your energy, so that when you are meeting new people, recognizing those similar values in other people. Because sometimes we're just like, oh, they're really different than me, but, you know, opposites attract and we can make this work. I think knowing your values really helps just say, okay, I think this person's cool and I think they're really great, but they're just not a great match for me because we don't see the world the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think I would add being self-aware of your feelings. Your feelings are critical data about what you need, what your values mm-hmm. are, how you feel in relationships. So tuning into feelings instead of blocking them out is critical. And I would say self-awareness is a muscle that you strengthen and that you absolutely. Should just be practicing it. You should always be asking yourself, what do I need right in this moment? How am I feeling, right? What is my reaction to this? If I could choose anything and nobody cared, what would I choose? And make it a muscle that is stronger than what it is now.
Absolutely. And you probably might know this, but 95% of people think that they're self-aware and about 10 to 15% actually are. So one of the things I say about people when they're dating is you're going to sit across from somebody who's going to tell you who they are, but that's not going to be the whole story. And that's why we date. That's why we spend time with people. That's why we take some time getting yes. to know them, putting ourselves in different situations with them, because most people truly are not self-aware enough to see all the different things that they do.
Yeah. Absolutely. And some self-awareness happens in the context of relationships. So a person could tell you who they think they are, and you may find out more about them, and they might as well if you're in a relationship with them. And that's normal. That's normal, part of being a human. But okay, here's my hot take on why I think Maggie is still a people pleaser who made no growth. We see her growth as trying all the eggs and as deciding to sell her wares in New York City, as Ike had suggested and encouraged. We do not see her pursue anything that wasn't recommended by Ike. And when she comes in the end and shares her realizations, like, I like this kind of eggs, I don't hear her saying, here's what I chose to figure out and what, you know, you didn't bring this to me. I did it for myself. I think she's just people pleasing Ike now. He wants her to know what kind of egg she likes. Great. She can tell you what kind of egg she likes. What else? What else can she tell you about who she is? Nothing? By that point, I was like, here it comes again. Here it is again. She's who Ike wants her to be.
And you and I talked briefly about New York friends, New York listeners. Please tell me.
What are the chances?
Because once you opened up this, you know, Pandora's box, this little, I had to, of course, think about it. Because one of the things that I thought was interesting was that she, of course, gets some of her lamps and different designs in the shop. He sees them. And I'm thinking, I have friends who are creators. I have friends, you know, and getting into a New York shop would be
difficult,
so hard. And then the chance of it being in his neighborhood without her, like, actively trying, is that even real? Like, to me, I feel like it was like she almost planted it there. I know this is ridiculous and this is not what they're trying to tell us in the movie. But I'm like, come on, is New York's a very large city. The chance that he's walking down the street and sees these in the shop, knows they're her, you know, is little to none. Little to none.
Did she even say she wanted to sell them in New York? No. He said, you could sell these in New York. And she said, maybe one day. And he said, yeah, you should. What, are you afraid? She didn't even answer. Maybe she does not want to sell her stupid designs in New York City, Ike. Which is why she's still people-pleasing. I've cracked this one. I'm telling you.
I think you have. And I think that you're just pointing out some really important things, which is, as much as they wanted to gloss over this and say they took a little time apart and then she comes and does this grand gesture, have things really changed? Okay, let's talk about some of our favorite characters or actors or actresses that we loved to see. I mean, I don't think I've mentioned it enough, but I love Joan Cusack. Love her since 16 Candles. I loved her since the 80s. I have a complicated love for John Cusack. So anything that Joan Cusack is in, I adore. What about you?
She's number one. She has to be number one. Everything she says is perfect. It's hilarious. It's on point when she's serious, sitting down with Maggie. She's so vulnerable and gentle and kind when she's being goofy. She's the best. I mean, I have never laughed so hard when they're having that serious talk and Maggie says, you know, I don't flirt with things, you know, men that don't move and aren't alive. And Joan Cusack says, well, you know, like some types of coral, for example. Her till the end of time. Absolutely. I mean, nobody else stands out compared to her.
I agree. And then we have mentioned in, you know, relationships, we loved Rita Wilson and Hector Elizondo's, you know, relationship. We felt like that was really secure. And I just like both of them a lot anyway. But yeah, Joan Cusack all day, every day. I want to see rom-coms with Joan Cusack. I want to see rom-coms with Judy Greer. I want to see rom-coms with Catherine Hahn. I want to see rom-coms with all of these best friends, sidekicks. Give me those people. Give me those
main
people.
Main kick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Main kicks. For me, for soundtrack standouts, because I'm such a little music lover, I'm a huge Sean Colvin fan. So any Sean Colvin song and any soundtrack is going to be a standout to me. I like that they came in strong. They started right away with my favorite U2 song. I still haven't found what I'm looking for, which was, you know, dramatic 20-something Kira's like favorite song to maybe belt out when she was drunk. little bit of a glimpse
into
that past, right? And then I'm not a modern country fan. I'm just not. But I do love bluegrass. And so there's some Dixie Chicks or Now They're the Chicks kind of throughout this. And I actually really enjoyed their role in it. But those were the soundtrack standouts to me.
And I will say, which I, you know, have disclosed to you, I love all of the soundtrack standouts that you pick out. And I
I like music, but it doesn't speak to me in the way that it speaks to you. And so you're going to be carrying the load for picking out the best songs from each of these films. And for our listeners, Kira very aptly recognized that, so you have no sense of smell and you don't like listening to music. So I'm down a few senses, people.
Is that what they're doing up in Boston and New England? Nobody can smell anything. Nobody likes That's music.
Right. That's right.
Oh my goodness gracious.
We're academics. Well, we don't have time for things like that.
Well, I'd love to share, you know, every time I like to bring some kind of behind the scenes fun facts and trivia. And this has actually got some interesting trivia. So first of all, if we notice, and maybe you don't, only because I'm a weird, rabid movie fan, this has many similar actors and setups as Pretty Woman. So I guess Julia Roberts at that time said she refused to do any sequels. And so Richard Gere had been kind of looking for another role for them. He was the one who found this and reached out to her. But that's neither here nor there, because it was actually in the works for over a decade with a lot of different people, right? So the first time was in 1992, Gina Davis was to play the character, and Harrison Ford were actually, yes, Harrison Ford, which I kind of see that. He does a really good grumpy, I could see him as a grumpy journalist. And in fact, I actually see him maybe a little bit more than I do Richard Gere, but they first were set to lead, but it fell apart. And then over the years, they also had stars like Michael Douglas, Demi Moore, Mel Gibson.
What?
Yes. And Mel even Gibson. Ellen DeGeneres. Remember, this is mid-90s, was in the mix for these roles.
I could see Ellen. That makes sense. I think she would have been good at it.
I actually do, too. But I actually think she would have had fun in Julia Roberts' role with this. But there's actually even, I think, Ben Affleck was tied to it at some point. Sandra Bullock was pitched. So a ton of people. And you'll be interested to know that it took until Richard Gere and Julia Roberts signing on. And then they actually called up Gary Marshall, who directed them in Pretty Woman, on his vacation. And he and his wife left their vacation to come home and start this movie. They're like, we want to do this. Are you willing to move forward and kind of bring the gang back together and do this movie with us? And he said yes. And so they made it happen. But the big problem with the script was that there was no reason of why she kept leaving all of these men at the altar. There was nothing. So that's why
there is no reason.
And the thing is, what they justify it now, this time, as she didn't have this self-awareness, right? That she didn't know what she liked for her eggs, and she didn't know what kind of wedding she wanted, as we already talked about. But that wasn't even part of the script originally. She was just some, like, you know, I guess, crazed person who kept leaving men at the altar for no psychological reason. So Hollywood, what? As much as we've kind of torn the script apart, it was worse. Wow. It was worse. I thought that was so interesting, though. I also thought it was fantastic that Julia Roberts earned $17 million for this role, while Richard Gere pocketed $12 million. So she was paid more, which is not something we always see.
Interesting. And then
that platypus face she makes for Joan Cusack for Peggy, like, yes, at the end of it, that was actually added in because Julia Roberts did that for Gary Marshall's grandkids when they visited the set, and they wanted her to do it in the movie. And so she agreed to do it in the movie.
That's really funny.
It is really funny. But yeah, there's a lot of similarities. So obviously Julia Roberts and Richard Gere. Hector Elizondo was also in Pretty Woman. Gary Marshall loves to put his family in. So his daughter plays Cousin Cindy. She was also in Pretty Woman. His son is actually the bed and breakfast clerk where Ike is staying. So if you actually see him, if you know what Gary Marshall looks like, he looks exactly like Gary Marshall. I think his grandkids are also in the movie. So he really brought the whole family together and like,
yeah,
let's
do
this. And I'm kind of sad because I read a bunch of articles about this, and Richard Gere was really sad this movie didn't do better. He said, we really we're kind of sad we regret maybe doing this movie as a follow-up to Pretty Woman because it didn't do that well. I really do think that this movie did great things, and I don't think it did that well critically, but I actually think this was a much stronger movie than Pretty Woman, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm sad that they looked at this as a failure across the board. But the last part of trivia is, if you want to know who loves this movie, it is Berlin, Maryland, which was the backdrop for Hale. And they've been celebrating their role in this movie for 25 years. They have festivals. There's a Runaway Bride walking tour. They have declared at different times August as Runaway Bride Month. And and they actually have you can see it. I'll put it in the show notes, a walking tour. You can go to this town of like literally 3,000 people and do a walking tour to see where different things were filmed in Runaway Bride, because it's 25 years. So good for them. So if there's a group of people who do love this movie, it is hands down Maryland. And they still are like, we're so thankful, you know, and they just, they have a lot of gratitude towards this movie.
Wait, can I add something for people from Berlin, Maryland? First of all, don't we think it should be a running tour instead of a walking tour? Just going to put that out there, a little rebranding.
I think we should throw some horses in there.
Do they have wedding packages where you can recreate her many different weddings? Because that feels, people like that. People like rom-coms. Maybe somebody wants to have a Maggie wedding. I don't know.
That's a marketing opportunity missed, right?
Right there. Yeah,
absolutely.
Too late for us, but some other people who haven't gotten married yet, if they want to, it's out there for you.
Do you have any positive takeaways, Isabel? We like to put one positive takeaway from every movie. I don't know if we've landed it each time, but do you have a positive takeaway from this movie?
You know, I liked so much of this movie, despite the parts that we highlighted that were problematic. But I think the real highlight for me was that it's not the goal just to get into a relationship. You know, the goal isn't to start something just for the sake of starting something. The goal is about building something authentic, you know, where you know yourself, your partner knows themselves to the extent that we can. It's a lifelong process to know yourself. And that you're creating something together that's genuine and wonderful and hard at times. And I think so often we focus on just wanting to be with someone, to start something, hoping that it's, you know, that will make us feel better or it'll go the way that we want it to. But this movie really shows you, you could be Maggie and you could start a bunch of seemingly great relationships and you could end up alone, not knowing yourself. And it's only once you focus on who you are and building something real where you'll get the benefit of being in a wonderful relationship. So that was my takeaway. What was your positive
takeaway? I love that takeaway. Yeah, I love that takeaway. Mine was just what they were trying to show but didn't do that great of a job. But I have a lot of people, since I work with singles, people, you know, slide into my DMs on Instagram and say, I've learned about my attachment style. I've learned about this. Can I get through it? Like, can I get on the other side of it? And to me, the answer is yes. There is so much that we can do in therapy, with coaches, with self-awareness, that can help us do better. Just because we may struggle at forming relationships or dating or just getting from A to point B doesn't mean we can't get there. The way I say it is, I met Danny at 41. I had never had a significant relationship like this till I did. I'd never lived with somebody like this till I did, and we figured it out. And I think that we want to be so perfect and we want to do everything so right the first time, we don't allow ourselves to understand that there's going to be growing pains, there's going to be failure and everything else, and just that there is real growth and opportunity for great relationships on the other side of that work. That who you are... Yes. Does not have to be who you continue to be. And we can throw that as a growth mindset. We can throw that as whatever. But I think that sometimes we're so used to being ourselves and the coping mechanisms that we've built to kind of protect ourselves, we don't see another version in the future. But I'm living proof. you can do it better. And I think that you're living proof that, you know, who you were when you entered your relationship is not who you are in the relationship now. And I don't know if we see that growth enough. And although this was minuscule at best, it was a start. And I want more growth. I want to see more people stepping back and being thoughtful to, why am I doing this? Or how do I do this better in the future? Or what do I need to work on to change? So that was my big takeaway.
Oh, I love that. And that's exciting, right? Like, it's not, I think sometimes when people say, or we say the work, it sounds intimidating. We're like, it's going to be arduous or painful, but the work can be really exciting, and it is lifelong. We are always learning about ourselves. We are always growing and changing and improving. And if you embrace that process, it's a wonderful thing. So I love that takeaway.
Awesome. All right, guys. So our final takeaways, do you have a rewrite or an alternative ending that you would have liked to see?
I do, but I kind of want you to start with yours, because mine is just an extension of what I think was an excellent rewrite by you.
Thank you. I wrote that after she decided to leave Bob at the altar, instead of literally turning around 2 minutes later and marrying Ike, to step back and go, I like you. There's clearly a connection here, but I need to step back and figure out why I can't commit. And I need to figure that out on my own for a bit with a professional. Done.
Yes.
And that's what I want all of us to take away. And the last thing that you will hear me say 1,000 times is, why can't you just date? Why did you have to get married? Why can't you just go, okay, so Bob, but there's something here. Let's spend some time together. Let's see if there's something actually here.
Yeah.
Why, okay, you like me, I like you, let's do it. I mean, that's a commitment. Anybody who's gone through a messy divorce knows you don't want to commit to somebody legally, financially, all of these different lees, when you don't know them that well. He could have been $500,000 in debt. She could have been. She's had all these weddings. Right? So maybe she has. She's keeping all of these rings too. I kind of think that she should have gave those rings back.
Wait, sidebar. The ring, keeping the rings, not okay.
Not okay.
Her ex, Gil, sharing the naked photo of her with a journalist, revenge porn, not okay. So I forgot that those are two standouts from this. So I agree. She goes to therapy. They date. They don't get married. I want to see the montage of her having sit-down conversations with each of her exes where she actually figures out what happened, how they felt. She repairs. She explores things outside of trying eggs to figure out who she is. And then, yes, they come together and she proposes that they go on a date. That would have been so cute.
I think they could have so ended it there. Just like, they yes. could have. They could have ended like where they're outside the church and she's like, okay, well, this is crazy.
You want to meet up for coffee?
Give me a little time, right? Like, how about you give me a couple of days to put out some fires, which she doesn't seem to think she needs to do. And then like, Let's plan a date.
Yes.
Let's like hang out for a day. Let's spend an afternoon together and find out more about each other. Cause she's like, you actually know me. I'm like, does he?
He doesn't.
How would he?
She doesn't even know herself. And I can't. Okay. So it ends the way that it ends. Kira, do they make it?
I so weirdly like this movie, even though I've just pointed out 1,000 things. Like when she proposes to him and then they dance and then we see in the foreword that they have this like smaller wedding, which is what I thought they should have done the whole time, of course. Or I'm like, why don't you guys pause and then discuss a wedding you both might want somewhere in the future. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't. And I don't think that they will make it. I actually really want them to make it. But here is what I think. I think she has not done anywhere near the work that is going to show, because even if she commits on her wedding day, that doesn't mean she's actually committed to this relationship long term.
No.
Anybody can get married.
Anybody yes, they can.
You can probably find somebody out there, but to actually have a working, functioning, healthy relationship is totally different thing. And I don't think, as much as we talk about Maggie, I don't think Ike has done any growth at all.
No.
And in fact, I don't even know if I think he's that good of a person. I don't think he's a very kind person. You and I briefly talked on this, but there's a whole big talk for the first half about him being a misogynist and like
hates
writing like a woman hater in his columns and everything else. So I don't know why, just because he started to like somebody 18 years younger than him in a small town, that's going to change, or that's all of a sudden going to be better.
Well, it's because he wants to write a novel because he was so inspired to be around her in that small town. He's going to write a beautiful novel about women and supporting them. So couldn't agree more. Not in a million years would this relationship last. If nothing else, I want to see them figure out where they're living. Are you living in Maryland? Are you living in New York? How are your worlds going to combine? What's happening with your career goals? None of it. None of it made sense.
What happens when he can't get it up in 2 years? I mean,
Kira.
All right. Welcome to the podcast, guys. This is clearly what it's really like. What are our ratings? I'll tell you mine. Overall, I gave it a 4. I do like this movie. As much as it's ridiculous, I think it's at least trying. And as you've heard from our trivia, this script was actually better than it was originally. They actually put some real time and thought into it, which is kind of sad to me. But the love lessons, I gave 3. And I said 3 for the pure fact of, I think there's a lot that we could have talked about. We could probably talked about 2 more hours about this movie.
Yeah.
We could have talked longer about this movie actually ran. Because I think there's just so much interesting stuff going on. So I do think that there's a lot of interesting love lessons. Most of them not that healthy, but I gave it a 3. What about you?
I gave it overall like a 3.54 because I also still loved it. It was funny. There was just some really funny parts to it. And yeah, Julia Roberts is just lovely. And I loved her in this. Love lessons, I gave it 2 tacos. I thought it was really lacking. I thought it didn't highlight stuff that I wanted it to. So I felt like it was on the weaker side, personally. All right, everyone, that's it for today. If you liked this, subscribe or follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on your favorite podcast platform.
And join us next week when we discuss 2023 British rom-com, Rye Lane. You're definitely going to want to watch it before we break it down. You can find it on Hulu. And I can tell you personally, this is one of my all-time favorite romantic comedies. Do not miss it. Go watch it so you can join us for the conversation next week.
And remember, you're not weird, you're quirky. Quirky and weird are 2 very different things.
I know, but I'm weird.